be reading Galatians chapter 2, verses 19 and 20. For I through the law am dead unto the law, and that I live unto God. I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me.
There's no better place I'd rather spend than the first day of the year here with you. It really is a wonderful day and a great way for us to be able to start a new year. You know, there's one thing that you can say about Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes is that he gives it to us straight down the line. He does not mince any words. He tells us about living life as it really is, not as it is in our dreams. He gives advice to help us to be able to cope in this sin-sick world. And yes, there are some things in here, straight talk, if you will, that oftentimes is very difficult to swallow. When you look at Solomon, you have to admit that he did it all. If you can imagine it, Solomon has done it. But as he sat down and he was penning this book, he started to realize the folly of living life under the sun. A life without God, a life without his wisdom. Ecclesiastes is a lot like the book of Proverbs in that it tells us how to handle life as it is. It uses wise sayings that are easily remembered. This morning, if you will, I'd like us to look at the first 10 verses of Ecclesiastes chapter 7. I want to look primarily at the seven contrasts that we see, and hopefully when we get through today, it will help us all to understand that these things happen to everybody. If you ask yourself the question, why does this always happen to me? There's a very good likelihood that it's happened to everybody else, not just you. In the first verse of Ecclesiastes, I like to use Ecclesiastes 7:1a, the very beginning. A good name is better than precious ointment. When Vicki and I were dating many, many, many moons ago, there was this fragrance that Vicki wore that just, I wished I could buy it today because I would order a tanker truck. And I would remember when we would separate at night and I would go home and I could still smell it lingering. But after a while, it disappeared. You know, ointments and perfumes are for an outward use only. They are used and then they're gone. The scent will either evaporate with time or it will be washed off. On the other hand, a good name, that which has influence and character, that which changes lives, that which is good and honorable, that which has a reputation, has integrity. All these come from the quality of our inner selves. There is nothing outward. It does not wash away. Solomon points this out in Proverbs 22 and verse 1 where he says a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches and loving favor rather than silver and gold. And if your name was brought up in a conversation, What do you think would be said? Now, oftentimes people are more honest about what they think of you when they're talking to someone else and not to you. Does your name stand for integrity and quality? Will your name help get you through life? The second part of this verse says, and the day of death, then the day of one's birth. Brethren, I don't know about you, but that kind of gets right here where it hurts. How can our death be better than our birth? When I look at the birth of my children and grandchildren, I see a great day. I really do. I don't know if my mom had the same feelings that I did when I was born, me and my brother. I think probably after about 6 months, she probably looked at my dad and said, "What did you do?" But the basic issue that we find here is answered by Paul in Philippians chapter 1 in verses 23 and 24. And I'll read from the New King James because I like the way they translated this. Paul said, "For I am pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you." So Paul basically here is saying, I'd rather be with God than with humanity. You know, the wonderful time after our death will far outweigh the painful and difficult days before our death. You know, there's certainly a time for and a place for social fellowship and recreation. A military man gets 30 days paid vacation a year. You get 2.5 days a month accrued. And the idea is that they want you to take sufficient leave or vacation time to be able to get away from the workplace. Get away from the stress, and it takes about a week for you to be able to unwind and then to relax so that when it's time to go back to work, you're ready to go and you're rejuvenated. And that's what socialism, our social fellowship and our recreation does for us. It's an aid in coping with reality, and it helps us to maintain a balance. It gets us away from the rat race, so to speak, and gives us time to rejuvenate ourselves. But it can be done to the excess. In Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 2, Solomon says, "Better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting." I submit this morning that a 30-minute stroll in the cemetery is far better than a whole day at the carnival. Now, you all might think different of that, but that's how the world thinks. That's kind of strange. The world, on the other hand, wants to say it's more fun at the carnival than the cemetery. The world wants us to know that we need to have fun and games all the time. Let's not worry about anything, especially about eternity. This brings to mind the parable of the rich fool in Luke chapter 12, in verses 16 through 20. Here was a man. He had a bumper crop. He had so much abundance that his old barns couldn't hold it. So he tore them down and he built bigger and greater barns to store all his stuff. And when it all finally got stored away, he said, "Look, I got enough to last me the rest of my life. I am going to take my ease. I'm going to eat, drink, and be merry. And then Jesus said, the Lord said to him, you fool, tonight your soul is required of you. You see, the world today is living in this fantasy of let's eat, drink, and be merry all the time without the realization that God is probably up there saying, your soul is going to be required of you tonight. Where do we stand? The result of walking through a graveyard causes us to think of those things that are beyond the grave. Without a doubt, we learn more from sorrowful situations than the atmosphere of a party. Things start to hit home. In verse 3 of Ecclesiastes 7, Solomon says, sorrow is better than laughter. Now, how many times have we heard a joke and we sit there and we go get ready to tell somebody else and we can't remember the joke? Or we get kind of part the way through the joke and we can't remember how it finishes and we botch it all up. Yet how many of us have walked through a cemetery and forgot that we ever did? Verse 4 says, the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. Now this is a true story. During the sinking of the Titanic, there was a woman that was just getting ready to get into the lifeboat when she ran back to her stateroom and she grabbed 3 oranges. She didn't touch her jewels. She didn't touch her money. She didn't touch her clothes. Just those 3 oranges. Those who know that they only have a certain amount of time left on this earth spend their time wisely. They finally get and realize what is important. They finally understand the things that need to be done. How many of us, when we get to that ripe old age and we've got more other things on our mind, go back to being the sport fanatic that we once were, maybe, as an example? Or maybe we finally realize that that square box, well, it's more rectangle than square now, that sits on a stand in our living room that's turned on all the time has little and less meaning. But spending time with family and friends seem to be drawing us more and more. So many times what was a tremendous priority in our lives soon becomes insignificant. What used to be worthless becomes priceless. In the 127th Psalm, in verses 3 through 5, David, he writes here, lo, children are a heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so, children of thy youth, happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. Those blessings that oftentimes we take for granted. I can't remember who sung it. I can't remember if it was Cat Stevens, the song, The Cat's in the Cradle. And the man, the father, is so busy. His son just wants him to play and spend time with him. And he's always too busy running after his life and dreams. And then he becomes an old man and he calls his son on the phone and his son said, Dad, I'd love to talk with you, but you see, I'm too busy. I got some other things I've got to do. It's been great talking to you, Dad. Yeah, maybe sometime we can get together. What a sad song. But how familiar is that song to you? Solomon, when you look and read Ecclesiastes, you can get the sense that he is losing interest in the silly side of life. But the sad reality of it is today that many of us never see that, and we never lose that silly side of life. In verses 5 and 6 of Ecclesiastes 7, it says, it is better to hear the rebuke of a wise man than a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under the pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This is also vanity. What does the song of fools sound like? You know, the Jews used to use thorn wood to heat and to cook. And there's one aspect of thorn wood that when it's on fire, it pops and cracks. It makes a lot of noise. But you see, that noise has nothing to do with the quality of the heat. It doesn't make the pot boil faster. It doesn't cook the bread any faster. You're probably more likely dodging sparks if you're trying to stir the pot. The sound of thornwood is meaningless and it has no value. It's the same thing that we can think of when we're listening to stupid and silly jokes or silly stories. Many of us fail to hear the rebuke of wise people. Oftentimes we don't want to hear it because, perfectly honest, we don't want the truth pointed out to us. We don't want to have to accept the realities of things that we need to be doing. You know, the sad part of it is, it isn't time to laugh and joke when your life's crashing down around you. Proverbs 11, verse 14, where no counsel is, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. It's time to hear the counsel of the wise. For this is certainly part of coming to terms with reality. The end of the thing is better than the beginning. Verse 8. Dreams are over. The whole truth at the end is on display. There will be no more unrealistic expectations and hopes. It's done. You can see the whole picture. How many of us at one time or another had said something to this effect? Oh, I wish I could do it all over again. I would do and make this change or that change. Or we might have said, if only I had just raised my children differently. That we could add on to this and on and on. These things come back to haunt us, don't they? The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Verse 8. It is always better to be patient than to do something foolish. Remember, patience is one of the attributes of the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5, verses 22 and 23. We fail to realize, I think, brethren, I always say we because I always include myself, that God is molding our character. He wants to make us fit for the kingdom of heaven. The one way that he does that is to replace a proud spirit with a patient spirit. I always thought, and I still do to this day, that my dad was one of the most patient men I ever knew. You cannot take 2 8-year-olds out fishing with an old tin reel that ends up in a bird nest with every cast, that my dad never got to wet his hook because he was untangling our reels. And he was always patient, never got upset. He was always willing to sit down and show us things. When we replace that proud spirit with that patient spirit, wisdom then can work in our lives. Listen to verse 9 here. It says, "Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of the fools." Wisdom cannot work in us as long as anger resides in our hearts. To allow our temper to go unchecked is the mark of a fool. Probably one of my favorite verses here, verse 10 in this chapter, because I'm guilty of it more than you probably know. It says, "Do not say, 'Why were the former days better than these?' For you do not inquire wisely concerning this." I always tell myself, boy, I sure do wish for the good old days. But Solomon is saying, don't long for the good old days because you don't know whether they will be any better than today. We can't get caught up in the past. Paul in Philippians 3 and verse 13, he said, "Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth those things which are before me." Brethren, friends, you cannot start the next chapter in your life if you keep rereading the last chapters. Period. In closing, I want us to look at verses 11 through 14. Wisdom is good with an inheritance and profitable to those who see the sun. For wisdom is a defense as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those that have it. Consider the work of God. For who can make straight what he hath made crooked? In the day of prosperity be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider, surely God has appointed one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. What does wisdom do for us? Wisdom preserves us from pride, from doubt, from resentment, and a whole slew of other feelings. Wisdom allows us to make a living. Wisdom provides us with the understanding that we will have both the good times and the bad times, that we are going to have straight days and we're going to have crooked days. Wisdom is going to help us to know that we do not need to worry about the future. God does what pleases him. And we must learn to accept it or be miserable. Coping with reality means making the most of what God sends our way. The future can be frightening for a lot of people. But to those inside the church, the future holds only great and wonderful blessings, which one day will be ours. Where will your life end up at the end of 2017? Who knows? And at this point in life, who cares? Because that's the end is a long way away. Where will you end up in the next 10 minutes? If you're not a child of God and in 10 minutes the Lord sends His Son back to collect His own, where will you stand? Where will you be? That's a question you need to ask yourself. If you're not a child of God, you're outside. I'm sorry. Don't be there. Don't be outside when He comes. Hear the word, believe it. Repent and confess and be baptized for the remission of sins, and then you are inside. God Himself will add you to His church, and your future awaits. Death won't have any more meaning because you will not die. You will be forever and ever and ever in His presence. If you are a child of God, and you wandered away, please come back. If there is something in your life that you need the prayers of the congregation for, if you need to make a public confession, something that has brought discredit among the church, then we want to give you that opportunity. God will erase that with a heartfelt repentance, and you will be cleansed again. Cause of that blood of Christ. If anyone has a need this morning, won't you come us together? We stand and we sing.